Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick with you. There are 29,000 inmates in California on hunger strike this week, protesting that state's solitary confinement policies and prison overcrowding there. California holds some 4,500 inmates in solitary confinement, and the psychological and emotional effects of years in solitary can be devastating. Some researchers liken those effects to PTSD. So today we have two views on whether long stretches in solitary have a place in a 21st century prison system. In a moment, we're going to hear from the president of the New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolent Association, who says it does have a place. But first, Brian Nelson. Mr. Nelson spent 23 years in a 12-by-9 solitary confinement cell in Illinois before his release 3 years ago. He's here to share his memories of prison life and reflect on the difficulties of reentry to society. Brian, welcome.
Hello.
Brian, 23 years in a 12-by-9 cell. I can say it, but I can't really begin to get my head around what that means, and I was hoping you'd help us.
Basically, I lived in a tomb or a mausoleum in a cemetery. My cell was completely gray, the color of a tombstone. I could see nothing outside except a little slit of light at the top of the cell that's by the ceiling that I couldn't get up there and look out. And other than that, I had no human contact, no telephones. I didn't see TV for most of that time. Out of the 23 years, 21 of them, I never saw TV. And I was not in solitary confinement for violating prison rules. And another thing that may shock your listeners is out of the 300 men that were in this supermax solitary confinement prison with me, two-thirds of them were in prison for minor offenses, not murder. Some of these guys were there for DUI. Some were drug possession. They were placed in solitary confinement just because they need to fill these beds at times.
All right. Well, I wanted to ask you about that and ask you what crime you were convicted of that got you into prison in the first place.
I pled guilty to a murder I did or was with somebody when it happened in 1982.
And what was your original sentence?
I was really sentenced to 26 years, and I was supposed to only do day for day of that 13 years.
And yet you spent 23 years in solitary confinement for a murder charge that you pled guilty to. Now, you said that you weren't in there for violating prison rules or bad behavior. As you understand it, why? I understand solitary for a couple of days or weeks when there's problems between inmates, of course, or punishment. 23 years. Help us understand why so long.
In 1998, Illinois opened a brand new supermax prison, and they had nobody to put there. I was in a minimum security prison. My job was making officers' uniforms. I would walk out to their cars, put the uniform in their car, come back into the prison and give them their keys. Within 24 hours, I was taken from this environment and placed in TAM Supermax. And I was there for 12 years straight. And this was because I had won a lawsuit against the Department of Corrections years earlier, as from what I understand it. I wasn't, no disciplinary reports, no assaults. I wasn't assaulted. I had did nothing wrong. And when I arrived at TAM Supermax, they asked me why I was there.
All right. Well, Brian Nelson, you described the physical environment of solitary and how you got there, or maybe we don't know how you got there, perhaps. Can you help us understand your state of mind, what being in an environment like that does emotionally? I might be a little hard just to tell me kind of what it's like, but yeah, what's it like?
Okay, a little history. Prior to TAMS, I was never on any psychotropic medication in my life. I had never had to see a psychiatrist in my life. I was in TAMS approximately 8 months before I was forced to start seeing somebody for mental health. I started pacing. I started getting depressed. I started just staring at the walls. I couldn't sleep. When I arrived at TAMS, I weighed roughly 176 pounds. The anxiety and the hopelessness got so bad at TAMS, I was pacing for 15 hours a day, according to the medical staff. And they used to have to bleed my feet every few weeks because I got blood blisters from walking so much. My weight at the lowest point got down to 110 pounds, and I'm 5'9". I lost the will to live sitting in that tomb. There was nothing to give my brain activity to think, to no social interaction. You're dead. You're just dead. And the sad part is I have faith in the Uptown People's Law Center filing a lawsuit gave us the hope that maybe something here could change. What I understand so much of what happened in California, we did the same hunger strike in Tampa. We just wanted to know, when will we get out of here? We wanted bilingual counselors and medical staff. We wanted the right to get an education because almost 99% of the prisoners in solitary confinement in TAMS had a release date. And by the time I got out of TAMS, they had me on four different types of psychotropic medication.
Do you think that solitary confinement has any legitimate role in these supermax prisons? Having experienced it, are there cases where it's appropriate, maybe apart from 23 years, but do you think it has a place?
Maybe for a calm down period. If somebody's just like on a rampage or just totally whacked out for like a set period of days, 10 days, 5 days. When TAMS opened, they said nobody would be there longer than a year because Warden Wilborn said nobody can survive this for years. And yet 15 years later, guys finally got out of there when TAMS closed. I mean, and here's our thing is we're Americans. We, most of us, are coming back out here to society. I'm so proud that I pay taxes. I did something wrong where I deserve to go to jail, and I admitted that, and I did my time. I'm not making up stories about it, but what happened to me and my family in there, my mom cried when she saw my cheekbones protruding. When I tried to kill myself, my family could not understand it because this just wasn't me. And I was found one day, my neck was so ripped up, I couldn't talk. And everybody's like, what happened? I said, I'm just tired. I don't want to do this no more. I don't want to sit here year after year with no hope of knowing I could ever get out of this gray box.
Brian Nelson, I want to thank you for sharing your story with us.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Well, we just heard from Brian Nelson, who spent 23 years in a 12-by-9-foot solitary cell. Some people say solitary confinement is there for a reason. It's a necessary tool for corrections officers. Prisoners are put into solitary for a reason. They're dangerous to their fellow prisoners and to the staff or to themselves. Don Rao is the president of the New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolent Association and an active corrections officer, and he joins me now from Albany. Hi, Don.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And thanks for being with us, Don. I know you heard the tail end of Brian Nelson's interview there where he described losing weight, blisters, pacing, psychotropic medications, depression, the loss of the will to live. Hearing all that, you believe that solitary confinement is necessary?
Yes, I do. I mean, we have a prison system that in New York that houses some of the most violent felony offenders in the country. Certainly, more than 90% of those inmates do their time without incident, but there are presently 7% in disciplinary segregation for the purpose of them causing harm to others or themselves.
Brian Nelson, for one, and a lot of other people for that matter, stipulate that when prisoners are a danger to others or the staff or themselves or there are fights, that certainly solitary confinement is necessary and appropriate. But 23 years was his experience, and I wonder if in your experience there's a conceivable justification for such a long time alone in a cell.
The justification of their stay in a segregation unit is based on, of course, the violence that they committed within the system. Just as society has a code of conduct, so does the prison system in order to maintain the security of the facility. So that's looked at. Their behavior is looked at while they're in disciplinary segregation. Their time can be reduced with their behavior being appropriate while they're in disciplinary. But as far as an inmate staying in there for extended period of times, that remains on the inmate. Certainly an inmate who killed a correction officer, who killed a correctional staff member, that's going to be looked at time and time again. But in New York State, we review inmates' stays on at least a 6 month basis, if not more.
You have heard, I'm sure, news of the widespread hunger strikes, 29,000 inmates in California. I know that's on the other side of the country from you, but you're experienced in this world. How do you react to so many inmates across a state the size of California protesting these types of conditions? What does it make you think?
Again, I think we have to look at the with a bit of skepticism with the delivery of the message and who it's coming from. Prisoners are manipulative. They use the media. They use the court system, prisoner legal service, ACLU, for their soapbox on issues, some that don't even exist. Certainly in New York here, an inmate in disciplinary segregation receives much more attention than an inmate would receive in general population, from medical staff, mental health staff, prison management, religious counseling, and so on and so forth.
All right. Well, Don Rao, president of the New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolent Association, thank you for your insights. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We always want to hear from you on this topic or others. Give us a call at 8778-MYTAKE. You can reach us on the website with your comments at thetakeaway.org.